Okay, so you've given us quite a bit of material here for this deep dive.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I mean, we've got transcripts from Curtis Yarvin talking on the New York Times podcast and also on Unheard.
Right.
And
we have the Behind the Bastards series on Yarvin and Peter Thiel, all four parts.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of bastards. We've also got Nick Land's audiobook, The Dark Enlightenment, those excerpts from MenciusMoldbug.pdf.
Right.
And then that YouTube video, Why Some Billionaires Are Actively Trying to Destroy the World.
Right.
I mean, it's quite a collection.
It is. It's a lot to dive into, but it all sort of circles around a very specific kind of a very specific and controversial figure, Curtis Yarvin, also known as Mencius Moldbug. And I think that's really the core of what we're going to be exploring here, this idea of the Dark Enlightenment and how his ideas have spread.
Yeah. And what's so interesting, I think, right off the bat, is that we can see how his ideas are connected to people like Peter Thiel, who's, you know, a very powerful figure in Silicon Valley.
Mm-hmm. And even J.D. Vance, right, has sort of come out and said that he's been influenced by Yarvin.
Right.
And then, of course, there's this whole concept of accelerationism that we need to grapple with.
Right. And I think it's important, too, to remember that we have a lot of different perspectives in these sources, right? So
yeah.
We have Yarvin's own words. We have people critiquing him. The Behind the Bastards series is very critical. And then these excerpts from the Mencius Moldbug PDF get into some of the controversy around him. And then the Why Some Billionaires video is looking at how these ideas of accelerationism can actually play out in some pretty scary ways in the real world.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little scary, some of this stuff.
It is.
So our mission here, I guess, is to really try to understand what is at the core of Yarvin's worldview.
Right.
Like, what are the basic building blocks of his ideas? What makes these ideas appealing to someone like Peter Thiel?
Wow.
And how do these ideas connect to the anxieties that people are feeling today about, you know, politics and society? I mean, there's a lot of people out there who are really unhappy with the way things are. And Yarvin seems to tap into that in a very powerful way.
He does.
Yeah.
And I think it's helpful to start by kind of breaking down what are the core elements of his philosophy.
Okay.
At the most basic level, he's really disillusioned with the existing political and social order.
Yeah.
He's not just saying, oh, we need to tweak things a little bit. He's basically saying this whole system is broken.
Yeah, he's not a fan of democracy.
No, he's not.
Yeah.
He's very clear about that in his New York Times interview.
Yeah.
He just doesn't see a connection between democracy and good government.
Right.
He even suggests that they might be opposed to each other.
Yeah, and he has this idea of the cathedral, which is really important for understanding his critique.
Yes. The cathedral is this idea that there's this dominant intellectual and media establishment.
Yeah.
You know, the mainstream liberal media, the universities,
mm-hmm.
people who work for the government for a long time, tenured professors, things like that. He sees all of this as being interconnected and fundamentally corrupt, and he thinks that this cathedral is preventing any real progress or good government.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that idea, you know, resonates with a lot of people.
It does.
I mean, there's a lot of distrust of institutions these days
right.
across the political spectrum.
Exactly.
And Yarvin gives people a way to understand that distrust.
He does.
So if Yarvin wants to tear down this cathedral, what does he want to put in its place?
Well, he's got some pretty radical ideas. And
because he does suggest that there needs to be a completely different way of organizing society.
Right.
And he talks about this idea of CEO kings.
Yeah, that's a key part of his vision, this idea of a kind of monarchy, but with a modern twist.
Right.
He wants to see small, almost like city states, each ruled by an individual who has absolute power.
Like a tech CEO.
Exactly like a tech CEO.
Yeah.
And he argues that this concentration of power in the hands of someone who's driven by long-term profit and efficiency would actually lead to better outcomes for society.
Yeah, right. And he sort of dismisses the failures of monarchies in the past.
Yeah. He says that those monarchies failed because they had to make too many compromises and because people didn't have the freedom to exit.
Freedom to exit.
That's another key concept.
So if you don't like your CEO king, you just leave.
That's the idea.
Yeah. I mean, is that realistic?
Well, it's the theoretical basis of his system.
Okay.
You know, the idea is that if people can easily move to a different city state with a ruler they like more, then that would create competition among these states, and they would have to be more effective and responsive to their people.
Right. But, I mean, we live in a globalized world.
Right.
It's not like you can just pick up and move to a different country that easily.
Yeah. There are definitely a lot of practical questions about how this would actually work.
Yeah.
And even Yarvin admits that there are some issues that he hasn't fully figured out, like how to prevent one city state from taking over another one, or how to stop people from just moving their money around to avoid taxes.
Right.
But the freedom to exit is a really important part of his vision.
Okay, so this all sounds very libertarian.
It does in a way.
But with absolute rulers instead of minimal government.
Yeah, it's a strange mix of ideas.
It is, and this is where things start to get really dark. Because Yarvin's vision isn't just about efficient government. It's also about rejecting the idea of equality. And he believes in natural hierarchies.
Yes, and this is one of the most controversial and troubling aspects of his philosophy.
I mean, he talks about a genetic right of elites.
Right. He really believes in natural hierarchies. And he thinks that there's a genetic basis for elite status.
Wow.
He draws on this idea of human biodiversity, which has historically been linked to scientific racism.
Right.
And he emphasizes IQ as the main factor in determining who should be in charge.
And we should be clear here that this term, human biodiversity, you know, it sounds neutral, but it's been used to justify some really awful things.
Absolutely. It's been used to create false hierarchies and to justify discrimination.
Right.
So when Yarvin uses this term, it's a red flag.
It is, and we need to address the fact that there are some really serious accusations against Yarvin about his views on race.
Yes, the excerpts from MenciusMoldbug.pdf and the Behind the Bastards episodes lay out some very disturbing accusations.
Yeah, I mean, they accuse him of saying that black people are genetically predisposed to being good slaves.
Right.
And that white people have higher IQs.
And it's important for us to say very clearly that these are not our views.
Absolutely not. We are not endorsing these views in any way.
But we have to acknowledge that these accusations are out there, and they're a big part of why people are so critical of Yarvin.
Yeah. I mean, these accusations are incredibly serious, and they really undermine any claim that he has to having a coherent or ethical philosophy.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really chilling stuff.
It is.
And it all ties into this idea that he has that modern political science is somehow inferior to the ideas of people who lived in pre-democratic societies.
Right. He talks about historical recency bias. This idea that we just assume that our current understanding of things is better simply because it's more recent.
But he thinks we might be missing out on some valuable insights from the past.
Yeah, like from people like Aristotle.
Right. So where do these ideas come from? I mean, what were the influences on Yarvin's thinking?
Well, the Behind the Bastard series does a good job of tracing his intellectual development.
Okay.
And one of the early influences was Austrian school economics, which is this very free market approach to economics that emphasizes individual liberty and limited government.
Right.
And that fits with Yarvin's general distrust of centralized power.
Yeah.
He was also drawn to the ideas of Thomas Carlyle.
Thomas Carlyle?
Yeah, he was a 19th century Scottish writer who believed in strong leaders.
Okay.
Even dictators.
Yeah.
And he actually offered racist justifications for slavery.
Wow. Okay. So not a great guy.
Not a great guy, no.
No.
Another influence was Hans Hermann Hoppe.
Okay.
He's a German-born economist and political theorist, also associated with the Austrian school. And Hoppe argues that monarchy is actually better than democracy because he sees monarchy as a form of privately owned government.
So a king would be like the CEO of a country.
Exactly. And Hoppe thinks that's more efficient than a publicly owned government, which is what he sees democracy as.
Interesting. And Yarvin seems to have taken that idea and run with it.
He has, yeah. He seems to have really embraced this idea that a single absolute leader is the best way to run things, whether it's a business or a country.
Wow. Okay, so we've got this kind of mix of free market economics and authoritarianism.
Yeah, it's an unusual combination.
It is. And then we have to put all of this in the context of this broader intellectual movement called the Dark Enlightenment.
Right. And that's where Nick Land comes in.
Yeah.
He's the one who really articulated this idea of the Dark Enlightenment in his audiobook.
Right.
And the Dark Enlightenment is basically a rejection of the idea of progress through democracy.
Okay.
They believe that democratic societies are in decline, and they want to see radical change.
So they're kind of like reactionaries.
In a way, yes, they're reacting against what they see as the failures of modernity.
Right.
Land sees the Enlightenment not just as a period in history, but as an ongoing process.
Okay.
And he uses this term reactionary modernism to describe a kind of flight from democracy.
Interesting.
But what's paradoxical is that they want to use modern technology to achieve this return to a more traditional way of life.
So they're not like Luddites.
No, they're not against technology. They just want to use it for different ends.
Okay, and Land even tries to find justification for his anti-democratic views in the writings of America's founding fathers.
Yeah, he points to people like Jefferson Adams, Madison Hamilton.
Wow.
And he highlights their concerns about the potential for mob rule and the possibility that democracy could become tyrannical.
So he's saying that even the people who created American democracy were worried about its potential downsides.
Exactly. He's trying to show that there's a historical precedent for being skeptical of democracy.
Interesting. Okay, so let's move from the theoretical to the practical. How do Yarvin's ideas connect to someone like Peter Thiel?
Well, the connection is very strong, and it's something that all of our sources point to.
Yeah.
Thiel has said publicly that Yarvin has influenced his thinking.
Right.
And they have a close relationship. Thiel has given Yarvin money, and they attend events together.
Right. The Behind the Bastard series calls this one of the most important connections in this whole web of ideas.
Yeah, and Thiel has a lot of experience in the tech industry.
Right. He's a billionaire. Yeah. He's a venture capitalist.
Exactly. And he sees the tech industry as being more efficient than the government.
Right.
And he's even used the word monarchical to describe the tech world.
Which is really telling, I think.
It suggests that he sees some parallels between the way tech companies are run and the way monarchies were run.
Yeah, and there's this report from BuzzFeed News back in 2017.
Right.
That Yarvin said that he was coaching Thiel on politics,
mm-hmm.
and that Thiel was fully enlightened after the 2016 election.
And in this context, enlightened means disillusioned with the existing political system.
Right. They both felt like the system was broken.
Yeah. They felt like the old way of doing things wasn't working anymore.
And the Behind the Bastard series suggests that Thiel and other people in Silicon Valley might see themselves as a kind of natural aristocracy.
Right. They've achieved so much success.
Yeah. They're billionaires. They've created these huge companies.
Exactly. And that might lead them to believe that they're somehow better than everyone else.
Right. And that maybe they should be in charge.
Exactly.
And then there's Thiel's investment in Yarvin's startup, Treelon.
Right. Treelon is the company that's behind Urbit.
Urbit.
Which is this decentralized social network.
Okay.
It hasn't really taken off yet, but the idea behind it is to create a network that's not controlled by any central authority.
Which is very much in line with Yarvin's political vision.
It is, yeah. He wants to dismantle centralized power structures like the cathedral.
Right.
And Thiel's investment in Urbit suggests that he sees value in both the technology and the political vision behind it.
Okay, so Yarvin's influence goes beyond Silicon Valley. He's also connected to people like J.D. Vance and the broader right wing.
That's right. Vance has said that Yarvin has influenced him.
Yeah.
And then there's Blake Masters.
Blake Masters.
He's another one of Thiel's proteges. And he ran for office, and he used Yarvin's RAGE acronym.
RAGE.
Which stands for Retired All Government Employees.
Wow.
And that really captures a lot of the sentiment on the right these days.
It does, yeah. There's a lot of anger and distrust of the government.
Right.
And the Behind the Bastards hosts argue that Yarvin has helped to create an intellectual environment where these far-right ideas can flourish.
Yeah, they say that he's influenced people around Trump and initiatives like Project 2025.
Right.
Which is this plan to basically take over the federal government and remake it in their image.
Wow, that's a pretty big claim.
It is, but they make a compelling case that Yarvin's writings have had a real impact.
Yeah, okay, so obviously there's a lot of criticism of Yarvin's ideas.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a very controversial figure.
Oh yeah, he's been accused of all sorts of things.
Like what?
Well, the excerpts from MensesMoldBug.pdf go into some of the criticisms.
Okay.
They say that he gets his history wrong.
Okay.
That he makes factual errors.
Right.
That his writing style is really dense and hard to follow.
Yeah, he's not exactly a clear and concise writer.
No, he's not.
And they also criticize him for relying on sources like Wikipedia.
Yeah, which is not exactly the gold standard of academic research.
Yeah.
So they're basically saying that he's not a serious scholar.
Right.
And then there's the racism and the anti-egalitarianism.
Yeah, we have to come back to that.
We do do.
I mean, those accusations are really serious.
They are. And they're central to the criticism of Yarvin.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that he supports slavery and that he thinks that white people are smarter than black people.
It is current.
It is. And right. And we have to remember that these accusations are based on things that he's actually written.
Right. This isn't just people misinterpreting him.
Yeah.
This is him expressing these views in his own words.
And it's important to note that he often uses irony and satire in his writing. So it can be hard to tell when he's being serious.
Yeah, he's not always straightforward.
Right.
But even if he's being ironic, the impact of his words is still harmful.
Right. I mean, words have power regardless of whether the person who's saying them is being ironic or not.
Exactly. And the Behind the Bastards hosts call his ideas kooky and dangerous.
Yeah.
And they say that his followers are kind of like those crank uncles that everyone has.
Right.
You know, the ones who are always ranting about conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
And the general consensus among critics is that Yarvin's ideas are extreme and fringe, even though they're gaining some traction in certain circles.
Right. So let's talk about accelerationism. Because there seems to be a connection between Yarvin's desire to tear down the system and this idea of accelerationism that we saw in that Why Some Billionaires video.
Yeah. Accelerationism is basically the belief that society is going to collapse anyway.
Okay.
So we might as well speed up the process.
Why would we want to do that?
Well, the idea is that the sooner society collapses, the sooner we start building something better.
Okay.
And Yarvin's rejection of democracy and his call for radical change definitely fits into that way of thinking.
Right.
He wants to accelerate the collapse of the current system.
And Nick Land is a big figure in accelerationism too, right?
Yes, he is.
So we see this connection between the dark enlightenment and accelerationism.
Exactly.
And that why Some Billionaires video talked about the fourth turning theory.
Right.
And how the belief that a crisis is coming can make people more open to accelerationist ideas.
Yeah, the fourth turning theory says that history moves in cycles.
Okay.
And that each cycle ends in a major crisis.
Right.
And so if you believe that a crisis is inevitable, then you might be more likely to think that we should just get it over with.
So we can start rebuilding.
Exactly.
But that fourth turning theory has been criticized a lot.
It has. Yeah. A lot of historians think it's too simplistic.
Right.
And that it doesn't really have much evidence to support it.
But the idea that a crisis is coming is really powerful.
It is. Yeah, it can make people do some crazy things.
And that video showed us how accelerationism has been linked to real-world violence,
right,
like the mass shootings in Buffalo and Christchurch.
Those shooters were explicitly influenced by accelerationist ideas.
Yeah, they talked about it in their manifestos.
They did.
And that's really scary.
It shows how these ideas can have really dangerous consequences.
Absolutely. And that video also talked about this other kind of accelerationism called effective accelerationism, or econdantic.
Right.
And that's more about accelerating technological progress.
Yeah, it's less about societal collapse and more about using technology to solve problems.
Okay.
Even problems that technology might be causing.
Right.
And people like Mark Andreessen and Martin Shkreli have been associated with accelerationism.
So it's a different kind of accelerationism.
It is, but it's still based on this idea that faster is better.
And that progress is inevitable.
Exactly.
Okay. So getting back to Yarvin, he has some pretty harsh things to say about American conservatism.
He does, yeah. He's not a fan.
In his New York Times interview, he called it a fraud.
Yeah, he said that it's always been a fraud.
And that it's going through a grieving process.
Because it's realizing that it's not actually effective.
Right.
He thinks that conservatives are all talk and no action.
Yeah, he thinks they're all about grifting.
Exactly.
Taking money from their supporters, but not actually delivering on their promises.
Right.
So what about religion and myth in Yarvin's thinking?
Well, he presents himself as a pretty secular guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's influenced by people like Mark Twain, who was very skeptical of religion.
Right.
But Yarvin has this interesting observation.
What's that?
He says that modern ideologies can function in a similar way to religion.
Interesting.
Like he talks about the mythos of George Floyd.
Right.
And how that's become a kind of unifying belief system for a lot of people.
So he's saying that even though we might not believe in the old gods anymore,
right,
we still need myths.
Yeah, we still need stories that bind us together. And he raises this question about whether religion could be useful in the kind of regime that he wants to create.
Right. Because he's not exactly religious himself.
No, he's not. But he seems to recognize that religion can play a powerful role in society.
Interesting. And Nick Land sees the whole idea of democratic egalitarianism as a kind of cult.
He does. He calls it universalism.
Universalism.
Yeah. And he sees it as this all-encompassing belief system.
Okay.
That's taken the place of traditional religion.
Okay. So finally, we need to address Yarvin's views on women, especially since he admires these pre-democratic societies.
Right. And those societies were not exactly known for their gender equality.
No, they weren't.
And the Mensch's Moldbug PDF says that he's against women having equal rights.
Wow.
And that he thinks they should have a more traditional role in society.
Like in the medieval period?
Yeah, something like that.
So this is another really problematic aspect of his worldview.
It is, yeah. It's a big part of why so many people find his ideas to be reprehensible.
Right.
And it's important to remember that these are not just abstract philosophical debates.
Yeah.
These ideas have real-world consequences.
Absolutely.
And we're seeing that play out in politics and in society today.
So let's try to sum up what we've learned about Curtis Yarvin and the Dark Enlightenment.
Okay, so basically Yarvin is a very radical thinker.
Yeah.
He wants to see a complete overhaul of the way society is organized.
Right.
He rejects democracy. He wants to see a return to monarchy.
But a monarchy with a modern twist.
Right. He calls them CEO kings.
And he believes in natural hierarchies.
Yeah, he thinks that some people are just born to rule.
And he's influenced by a weird mix of ideas.
Yeah, Austrian economics. Mm-hmm. Thomas Carlyle, Hans Hermann Hoppe.
Right.
It's a strange brew.
It is. And he's connected to some very powerful people.
Like Peter Thiel.
Right.
Who's a billionaire and a major figure in Silicon Valley.
And J.D. Vance, a politician.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So his ideas are having a real impact.
And he's also incredibly controversial.
Yes.
He's been accused of racism and sexism.
And his writing is often dense and difficult to understand.
And he relies on questionable sources.
Like Wikipedia.
Right.
So he's a very polarizing figure.
He is. And it's important to remember that we've looked at a lot of different perspectives on him.
Right.
We've heard from people who support him and people who are very critical of him.
Exactly.
So we've tried to present a balanced view.
Yeah. We're not trying to tell you what to think.
Right.
We just want to give you the information so you can decide for yourself.
Exactly.
But I think it's safe to say that Yarvin is a dangerous thinker.
I agree.
His ideas are extreme, and they have the potential to lead to some very bad outcomes.
Yeah, and the fact that he's gaining influence is really worrying.
It is.
So I think the big question that we need to ask ourselves is, why are these radical ideas so appealing to people?
Right.
I mean, what does it say about our society that someone like Yarvin is able to gain a following?
And what is it about our current system that's making people so disillusioned?
Right.
That they're willing to turn to someone like him for answers.
And what is our responsibility?
Right.
I mean, we can't just ignore these ideas.
No, we have to engage with them.
Even if they're unpleasant.
Exactly.
We have to understand them.
But we have to figure out how to counter them.
Because if we don't,
then these ideas could have a really negative impact on the world.
I think that's a good place to end.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It was my pleasure.
And we encourage you to do your own research.
Yeah, read the sources that we talked about.
And come to your own conclusions.
And let us know what you think.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Okay, so until next time.
Stay curious.